Here are some questions now that speak to a living legacy in American education. What do you think segregated schools were like in pre-1954 America? In what parts of the country were schools segregated? What is segregation? Does it still exist? The Supreme Court decision has come to be known in shorthand form as Brown v. Board of Education, but that one name represents several cases. What other cities and states were involved in court battles to end public school segregation? These are discussion questions for a seventh grade unit of social studies. 60 years ago, the adults asking these questions were lawyers, arguing before the U.S. Supreme Court. The case declared that in the field of public education, the doctrine of separate but equal has no place. Brown v. Board of Ed changed education, but it is also a part of the American history taught in the classrooms desegregated by the very decision. Joining us is Joy DePalm, a sixth grade language arts and social studies teacher at the Boston Teachers Union School in Boston, Mass. Joy, welcome.
Thank you.
Also with us is Beth Berkey, a seventh grade language arts teacher at James Martin Middle School in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Beth.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
So, Joy, let me begin with you. What's it like to have students in your class grappling with and asking the very same questions that Thurgood Marshall put to the Supreme Court in the Brown v. Board of Ed decision?
This is really a coincidence. I'm actually starting a unit where we'll be looking at Brown v. the Board of Ed, as well as Plessy versus Ferguson. A lot of students don't understand what racism is, what prejudice is, and the difference between the two. And so there are a lot of questions. There are a lot of unknowns. One of the misconceptions about race and racism is that race is a human construct, and that racism is systemic, and that I myself, as an African-American teacher, because of my educational background, I too am capable of perpetuating racism in a system if I'm not aware of it. So my main goal is to make them aware that it is systemic, that it's not a one-on-one interaction, that that's different.
All right. So a lot of learning to do there in your class. Beth Berkey, what's it like for you to see the kids grappling with these same issues in a school classroom?
I see a lot of the same things that Joy sees. A lot of the students don't understand what racism really is, and they definitely use the term in a way that it shouldn't be used. You know, if somebody calls somebody else by their race, they think that that person is being racist. The other thing is that students don't realize that this only happened 50 years ago. They think that it happened, you know, a very, very, very long time ago because they don't have the conception of the time yet.
So, Beth Berkey, it sounds like it's really a challenge to deal with this on a psychological level, that in some ways the historical details are the easy part.
That is very true. And the students, they do try to understand that this, you know, didn't happen that long ago. But we had a good conversation this year. I did a whole unit on diversity and racism and prejudice, and they do feel like it's still an issue today, and they do feel like they're at a disadvantage. So it's interesting for me, especially as a Caucasian teacher, to stand up in the front of the room in a whole class that's filled with African-American and Hispanic children and hear them kind of open up about that. But they definitely do still feel like they're at a disadvantage today.
For both of you, what is the shadow of segregation in 2014? Beth, let's begin with you.
Sure. So the school that I teach at is definitely still somewhat segregated. It is about 70% African-American and then 25% Hispanic. So there's a little bit of diversity there, but not much. And it really does have an effect on the kids because they are so unaware of what else is out there in the world. And there's so much less that they've experienced that a lot of kids that live in other parts of the country do get to experience. So it's definitely still apparent today. When my school first opened, they used to bus the students so that it was very diverse. But because of funding, they had to stop doing that.
So Beth, has a student ever raised his or her hand and said, why are we so segregated here? I thought Brown versus Board of Education was supposed to get rid of this.
Not in those exact terms, but they have brought up the fact that they do feel like going to school where they don't have the same opportunities as other students. So we have to do our best as teachers to hold them to those high expectations so that they don't feel that way and that they don't think that way.
Joy, what's the shadow of segregation in your classroom as you can see it?
On paper, the school building seems diverse, but certain parts of the building have more Black and Brown faces than others. My students, it's not until they step out of the school that they realize that there's something different. We've had students who have gone into a program called METGO, where they attend school in the suburbs, and the disparity in the funding at these schools, it's like amazing. It's like, you know, oh, Mr. Palm, I went to this high school and they have a music studio and an art studio. And why don't we have that in Boston? And I'm kind of at a loss because I have several answers as to why that's happening. And equity and access is one of them.
So it sounds like you need to do a unit on economics and class in America, right?
Yes, I'm a busy person. So at some point it'll happen. But it's a multifaceted issue. What do you do with this information once you get it, once you know that in some cases the cards are stacked against you? It's not a pass to give up. And so my goal is to create a space, a safe space for students to create that counter narrative that says, okay, you don't want to give us funding. You want to keep us, you know, separated within a building that looks integrated. This is what I want to be. And these are the people who are going to support me and my aspirations.
How are your challenges in the classroom, Joy, different than being a mom?
They are not that different. I have a 5-year-old young Black boy. I think he is a genius, and I feel the same way about him that I do about my students. So a lot of times when I'm faced with dilemma on how far should I go for my students, I always think about what I want someone to do for my son. Would I want them to put limitations and tell him that he can't do something or he can't be something, or would I want to guide them through the steps and let them make the decision on their own?
You know, I'm hearing from both of you, and Beth, maybe you could answer this before we go. I'm hearing from both of you that there's really a lot to be done 60 years after Brown v. Board of Education, and that the kids in your classroom, Beth, are very conscious of the economic disparities that are such a huge political issue right now in America.
They are very aware. Something that was really heartbreaking for me this year was during our unit on diversity, I had a student actually say that Hispanic and African-American kids can't do anything else besides become drug dealers. And to hear that was really shocking, to really know that they actually think that way. So through the lessons that I did, I really tried to teach that they can't let those things stand in their way.
Joy, does that sound familiar to you?
Somewhere in society, this message is being sent to our children that children of color are inferior in terms of their intellectual ability. And so that's a battle. I mean, if they're finding this out at 2 and I'm getting them at 11 and 12, that's, you know, over a decade of damage that has been done that, you know, I have to start to chip away at.
The challenges in the classroom 60 years after Brown v. Board of Education. Beth Berkey and Joy DePalm, thanks so much for sharing those stories with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Previously, we had been told that if we went to white schools, that they were smarter, that they were bigger, better, and faster. It was then that I found out that there were smart people and there were dumb people in both races. And so that to me was, something that I really discovered.
A memory of what it was like when desegregation came to the public schools of Miami in the 1960s. Reatha Boumfai was in eighth grade when she became one of just a few Black students at Miami Jackson Senior High.
You could tell the ones that really did not want us there. In fact, some of them transferred out.
Every week we were used to having anywhere from 3 or 4 bomb threats. The siren go off, the fire department come.
In 1963, Marnie Pinder there was a first-time classroom teacher responding to those threats in her integrated fourth grade class at the once all-white Alapata Elementary School. Those memories are part of what happened in the years following the Brown v. Board of Education decision that desegregated public education in the United States 60 years ago. They come to us from our friends at WLRN in South Florida. And so we ask you, what is the shadow of segregation in the classrooms in your community? What divides kids today?
Hi, my name is Jessica Baker, and I am a teacher from South Carolina. And I feel one of the greatest challenges that continues to divide American classrooms is parental involvement. From taking kids to museums or parks and talking about what they're studying in school to simply demonstrating a belief in the value of education, parents are rarely found to be a happy medium.
Thanks for that, Jessica. Bradenton, Florida writes, socioeconomic divides are a huge problem that show up in districts and schools and even within a class. Unfortunately, these socioeconomic differences tend to correlate with racial differences. Schools are still highly segregated, often coincidentally with racial divides, because socioeconomic status often dictates student performance and preference. Karen from Orlando, Florida agrees.
My son will graduate in June from one of the top public schools in the county. Our federal graduation rate at his high school is 93%. And the weakest school in the county graduates 74% of its students, and the difference is poverty. One school serves 28% of its students free lunch, and the other serves 85%. So when we look for why our classrooms continue to divide, all we need to do is follow the money.
One division in today's classrooms is the blurry line between special education and mainstream students. I've seen regulatory issues or just a simple lack of resources leave students with a wide range of disabilities lumped together with others who might not learn in a similar way or at a similar pace. There are students with dyslexia or Asperger's sharing classrooms and curriculum with students who have very different needs, such as those with Down syndrome.
Different times, different divisions in the classroom. San Antonio, Texas says it's about the teachers. Inequality in the distribution of resources plagues the system. Good teachers have no incentive to stay in underprivileged areas, not to mention the hair trigger response to cut education funds and budgets when states face fiscal troubles.
I'm Diana from Miami, Florida, and I think the biggest division in schools today is between the kids that make it to top universities and the kids that just drop out of high school at 17 out of frustration with the system that isn't serving them well.
The good America tries to deal with its divisions, racial divisions. 60 years ago, it was Brown v. Board of Education. What was it today? What is it today? Continue sharing your thoughts about the legacy, what continues to divide American classrooms, by calling us at 877-8MYTAKE or tweet us at The Takeaway.
Support for The Takeaway comes from TiVo. Recording up to 6 shows at once and 3,000 hours, plus Netflix, Hulu Plus, and YouTube. All on the TiVo Romeo DVR. TiVo.com.